Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're coming to you live from east of the Appalachian Mountains. AccuWindow forecast is about 57 degrees outside. Dark, of course. Although daylight savings time should be kicking in for most of us. Those of you that stayed up till 2 o'clock in the morning and changed your clocks, you should be with us right now. This morning, the Solar and Heliospheric Observatory recorded a halo coronal mass ejection emerging from the vicinity of sunspot 1054. High-latitude sky watchers should be alert for auroras, and NASA solar physicist David Hathaway reports that the top of the sun's great conveyor belt has been running at record high speeds for the last 5 years. Quote, I believe this could explain the unusually deep solar minimum we've been experiencing, close quote, says Hathaway. The high speed of the conveyor belt challenges existing models of the solar cycle, and it has forced us back to the drawing board for new ideas. It's a little like measuring the speed of a river on Earth by clocking the leaves and twigs floating downstream, Hathaway says. The speed up was surprising on two levels. First, it coincided with the deepest solar minimum in nearly 100 years, contradicting models that say a fast-moving belt should boost sunspot production. The basic idea is that the belt sweeps up magnetic fields from the sun's surface and drags them down to the sun's inner dynamo. There, the fields are amplified to form the underpinnings of new sunspots. A fast-moving belt should accelerate the process. So, where have all the sunspots been? The solar minimum of 2008-2009 was unusually deep, and now the sun appears to be on the verge of a weak solar cycle. Very interesting. The fields are amplified to form the underpinnings of new sunspots. That's peculiar. Instead of boosting sunspots, Hathaway believes that a fast-moving conveyor belt can instead suppress them by counteracting magnetic diffusion at the sun's equator. It's kind of interesting that they've been watching the sun so closely with very advanced instrumentation, and yet they're still making up new theories. What researchers really need is a good look deep inside the sun. NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory, launched in February 2010, will provide that when its instruments come online later this year. SDO is able to map the sun's interior using a technique called helioseismology. SOHO can do the same thing, but not well enough to trace the great conveyor belt all the way around. SDO's advanced sensors might reveal the complete circuit. And then, it could be the missing piece we need to forecast the whole solar cycle. Very interesting. Maybe when they get this new instrument online, we'll be able to tell a little bit more about our sun, and hopefully they don't discover that the age of the sun is quite a bit different than what they now believe. Very interesting. There were 20 earthquakes in the last 24 hours, with four of them over 5.0 and one of them over 6.0. The Earth is relatively quiet today. I want you to pay close attention to the news this week. A lot of things are going to be happening in terms of energy research, in terms of energy projects being able to come to the forefront and reaching the consumer. I think some marvelous changes are about to take place. You know, many of us have wondered about the creation of the earth. Some of us were taught the story from the Bible. In fact, every religious tradition has a creation story. The Hopi Indians, you just about name it. Somebody is going to teach a creation story or a version thereof. Scientists like to hold facts in their hands, so perhaps drawing away from the traditions and looking into space or deep into the ground, they search for the truth. And that's exactly what we're going to do in 40 seconds. When we come back with our guest tonight, well known by his friends as Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi Sebryansky. We'll be back in 40 seconds. Don't go away.
Expands consciousness. The spice is vital to space travel.
When scientists seek deep into space or deep within the earth, they find truth. But when the truth we see at the small end of our telescopes does not match the words we have been taught in our religious classes, a grand division occurs in our society. We seem to be standing across an abyss, judging one another. Well, the abyss may be one of our own making, and it might not be all our fault. As it turns out, there's a strong possibility that the observations of the prophets of the past or the future may have been very close to the scientific observations being made today. The error may have occurred in the translation and interpretation of the oldest languages on earth as they were passed forward through time to we modern humans. If we could just find someone who could read the ancient texts the way they were written, perhaps we could bridge the abyss once and for all. Joining us tonight is one of the world's most scholarly resources on the source language for most of the religious traditions on earth today. Please welcome with me Rabbi Yossi. Welcome to the program, my friend.
Thank you.
Rabbi, we love to discuss the mysteries of the universe and of the earth on this program. We look out into space and we see an amazing display of order and chaos in very slow motion. It doesn't look like anything happens in a day or even a year from our perspective. Millions of us have done the comparison between what we read in our oldest records of creation and what we see in space and came up wanting. We need an expert. And when I was introduced to your writings by our friend Christina, I was overjoyed to see that you had made some incredible discoveries that may offer us hope after all. Can we start with the creation story in the Torah, or more specifically the book of Genesis?
Absolutely. The book of Genesis, as it's called, has been translated in a way that actually separates people from connecting with the words. And as I've learned, that if you want to hide something, the best place to hide it is in plain sight. And the same thing is with this mystery and these words. The words are there, everyone explains them, and everyone goes over what everyone else says, and all the scholars but very few actually go into the real root grammar and spiritual energy of each word. A little bit of that tonight.
That sounds
Let's
interesting.
Start with the first word, just to give you an example. The first word is translated as in the beginning, Bereshit, in the beginning, which gives you a timeline. It gives you a concept of whatever you want to imagine in the beginning is. But actually, that is not what the word says. The word Bereshit, or Bereshit, the root word in Hebrew, you have two or three letters that are the root word. The root word here is head. And in ancient texts, ancient Jewish texts, they translate this with head as meaning with wisdom. So if you read the Hebrew, it says with head is created, or with wisdom is created.
Ah.
That's very different than saying in the beginning. What it means is that something is there and using its head and using wisdom to create, which is not in the beginning the way people see it.
Well,
it also means that everything that is created with wisdom in it, wisdom of the Creator. So the first word should be translated with wisdom. The second word that is bara is translated as created. The word created is not what the word actually means. The word bara means the clear space that is made when a hole is made. For example, if you're sewing and you put a needle through the material and the needle comes out the other side, that hole where the needle is coming out would be bara. It's coming forth. If you cut a forest, you make a clearing, that would be bara. Birth. It's the same as birthing. Something, it's what's coming out. So you don't see what's behind it. All you see what's coming forth from it. So the word I translate bara as brought forth. Or coming forth, with wisdom is brought forth. Elohim, which is translated as God, is another problem, because in Hebrew you don't really have the word God. The word God in Hebrew doesn't exist. In Hebrew there are many different names. Each name is just a different power in creation, a different force. The word El, which Gabriel, Michael, all these L's, the word L in Hebrew means power. And so there are all these different powers, and each power is given a name. And here, the word Elohim means a power of boundaries. So you begin with wisdom is brought forth a power of boundaries. Then the word Ace with Hashamayim, the word heaven. Heaven is kind of doesn't mean anything to us. The word Shamayim in Hebrew is two words, fire and water together. So this is a space where fire and water, two opposite pools, coexist as one. So I translate it as a balance of opposite movements. Veis Haaretz and the earth. In Hebrew, there are many different words for earth. If you want to say the actual ground itself, you would say Adama. There's Tevel, there are other words. Right? The word Aratia has the word Rot in it, to run. To run to the oneness. Aleph is one and Rot is to run. So it would be the desire of running to the Creator, to the oneness. So essentially the way I translate the first sentence would be, with wisdom is brought forth a power of boundaries, with the balance of opposite movement, and with the desire to do the Creator's will.
Wow. So when we're looking at the book of Genesis, and we're looking at it in English, let's just say the King James Version, which is the version most Westerners are familiar with, And it says, you know, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God. And then it says, and the Spirit of God moved across the face of the deep. We're setting things up here for the first day, and we'll discuss what period of time a day is here in a few minutes. But what are we really seeing here? We're seeing the Spirit of God move across the face of the deep. What deep? What are we talking about here? This always kind of loses people in the imagination of the Scripture.
It's not actually a translation of the words. It's the imagination that of whoever wrote it, how they felt people could accept it. They could give to people to accept it, but it's not actually a translation of the word.
I gotcha.
Not a proper translation. And I'll give you an example. The second sentence, I won't go through each, analyzing each word at the moment. The second sentence, which is, you translate the deep, where it says, some translate it, the earth was astonishingly void with darkness over the surface of the abyss, and God's Spirit hovered over the surface of the water. I'll give you my translation of it. Coming forth, the desire... See, in the first sentence, you have wisdom. You have what's brought forth is boundaries, because you can't have existence and creation if you don't have boundaries. So you have boundaries. You have everything balanced, which could be heaven, but that's not what the word means. You have balance and you have desire. So now coming forth, the desire becomes movement without form and flow without shape. And an opaqueness on a presentation of endlessness and a sense of merciful wisdom of a power of boundaries is moving to and fro with an elevated comprehension of the surge of wisdom.
That's wow.
The second sentence. A little bit different than the common
translation. I would say so. That's a lot different than what we have been handed down. So what are we to grasp from this? Now, the Creator in this stream of writing is a single intelligence, or is this a collection of intelligences?
That's a very interesting question. And when one reads here, as we go on, we'll see that Adam and Eve is not actually necessarily the first people that were ever created. According to Jewish tradition, God was creating and destroying many worlds before he created this world. 967 worlds, the sages say, were created and destroyed before this one. So, according to Jewish tradition, this world is not the beginning of creation. The Jewish calendar actually counts itself from where Adam and Eve were created, not where the world begins. There's a lot of discussion what time existed before, or if it existed. Actually, essentially, the way I'm translating it, and when I look into the spiritual meaning of the words and the grammar also, there's actually no physical creation here until much later on. While everyone talks about this as a physical creation, it's not at all. It doesn't happen till later. This is all energy, vibration, nothing physical. Now, we're going to jump a bit, but just to give you an example of how I know it's not physical. Everyone talks about 6 days of creation, seventh day he rested, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you read it as a physical thing, then the sun and the moon are created on the fourth day. Now, how is it possible you can have day and night and 4 days that the sun and moon are created on the fourth day if they didn't exist before?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's
really
not possible.
That's correct. I mean, there's no metrics.
People trying, you know, religious people just say that's the way it is. You know, they try and they don't listen to what it's saying. The word day, which is translated in Hebrew, is very fascinating. You have to look at the formation of the letters. The formation of the word day is the following formation. It has three letters. One letter, which is called Yud, is a dot. The second letter, which is a Vav, is the same dot, but with a line that comes down. And the third letter is a square with a center in it. The idea of that is the dot, the source of life, of existence, is drawn down, that's the second letter, into a square, into a boundary. In other words, these are six levels of expression of life force within specific boundaries, not 6 days of creation, but 6 levels.
So we're not really talking about days like we understand a day of our Earth revolving on its axis and the sun appearing to go from horizon to horizon on our planet. We are talking about 7 levels, which could be periods of time. They could be even dimensions.
These are 7 descriptions of levels of creation. It has nothing to do with time.
Right. And it does seem that most of the religious traditions of the world kind of get caught up in the time aspect. And I think if they could get past that, they'd be much more understanding here. Now, you mentioned that, and this is something that we do see in the cosmological record, and we also, as it turns out, might see it in the anthropological record, and that is that you mentioned that God had created and destroyed multiple worlds. We do see worlds being created in space, and we also see worlds and stars being destroyed in space. The intelligences that may or may not occupy those worlds don't end with those worlds. They go on. And some of those intelligences, it appears, have ended up here on this Earth. So help us understand this concept a little bit better about creating and destroying multiple worlds and maybe why.
Okay. Let me go back for a moment to a question earlier, and then I'll come back to this. You asked who God is or the creator or what the... Basically, in Judaism, the source of all existence, you can call God or creator or whatever, the source, has no form and no shape. It has no definition. So, essentially, we're going from an existence that has no definition to an existence of definition.
Okay. Yeah, right. He's undefinable by our terms.
Definitions. We can only understand things with definition. All we can understand is beyond that definition, but that's all. But to comprehend something with no beginning, no end, is beyond our ability.
Well, because, speak for yourself. I mean, there are people who are meditating on this all the time. No end is sometimes easy to imagine. I mean, I have taken and passed physical chemistry, so I understand no end, but no beginning, that's a tough one. That's a real tough one.
It is a tough one, absolutely. So within Judaism, it's an existence that has no beginning, no end. And this existence is the source of everything that exists. So that means that everything that exists makes no difference to that creator. In other words, all the reasons people give why we're here, why God wants us, are only ways and excuses they want to pacify themselves as to why they're here, but it's not why they're here. Because all the reasons we give have limitations. And in order to understand why everything exists, you have to go to a source that has no definition in order to know why everything is here.
Okay.
So it's a little bit abstract, but it's okay. Now, so the when you go into spiritual realms, the physical realm is basically one realm. It has many levels, but it's one realm. The spiritual realms have many different realms, many different levels. So what to us in this world is spiritual, and people, I taught Kabbalah for many years, people describe all different levels and worlds and angels and souls and all different things. All these descriptions and things that people talk about are low spiritual realms. And for higher spiritual realms, those spiritual realms are physical. So you're talking about an infinite amount of spiritual realms. Now, infinity is also limited.
Okay. What is are we talking about limits of energy? Are we talking about...
No. If something is infinite, then it is also limited. See, people see infinite as always unlimited. They don't realize that when you have a definition of something, you define something, you give it a limitation. When something is infinite, it cannot be part of a finite existence, because then it's not infinite anymore.
Well, that's true. I mean, when we put things, for instance, we have a set of mathematics in cosmology, which we call the metric tensor, and it's a pretty useful matrix. The problem is that most of the answers that we get out of the metric tensor, when we put problems into it, either come out infinitesimally small, too small to even consider, or they come out infinity. Neither one of the answers are really useful to us. We like to have something that's, you know, measurable, comprehensible. So, to say that something is limited because we say that it's infinity, it's only because we're stupid humans and we really can't, we don't have a word that means undefinable. It's sort of like, you know, 7 divided by 0. It's undefinable. It's such a large number that we consider it an illegitimate mathematical operation. But really, it is legitimate. We just don't understand it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what Judaism does is it says, in order to connect with the source of all existence, you have to go beyond the finite and beyond the infinite. A place of beyond all definition, there everything is equal. There's no differences, no up and down, no right and wrong. Everything is the same. And then when you come back to the body and to the world, you're coming from a different space. And because of where you're coming from, everything is equal.
Well,
happens when you connect it directly with the Creator, you can come back to this space.
Ah, that's an interesting point. That is an interesting point. Well, let's go back to the creation. We kind of breezed through
okay.
a little bit, and
we'll go off everywhere, but we'll come back. Okay.
I have a couple of people who are writing in on Skype. They're too cowardly to call in. I'm not saying they're cowards. I didn't say that, did I? Of course I did. The phone line, if you want to call in and get involved, is 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. My guest tonight is Rabbi Yossi Sebriansky. He's known by his friends as Rabbi Yossi. That's how we're going to address him tonight. One of the things, I mean, it appears to me is perhaps I can play the role of scientist today, only with an open mind. It looks like in the Genesis version of creation, that there was this massive water planet in the void of space. But my observation here is that the water, at least from the description that's in the English version of Genesis, was not frozen, and it's not a boiling mass of steam. It's liquid. And liquid water needs a very narrow set of limits to exist, especially in space. Planets within these limits appear to be very rare. Astronomers call it the green zone. It's sort of the Goldilocks zone. Not too hot, not too cold. This is an orbit around a star that is just right for liquid water to exist. But there's no mention of a star in this first day. Is there a provision for this in the ancient record?
Well, it's a little bit different. The word water actually really means here a surge of wisdom of the Creator. It's because the wisdom is flowing everywhere. It's called Mayim, which is we translate as water. So it's still a space that doesn't have definitions as we have it. It's just the wisdom of creation flowing everywhere. So it's still not a place for stars or anything to come into any critical mess, because it's just a flow everywhere.
Okay.
Flow of energy, a flow of frequency, whatever you want, but it's just a flow.
Okay. I got that. So we may not be talking about a star. We might be talking about other forms of energy that aren't, shall we say, visible light. We might be talking about X-ray or even sound or even infrared, which of course wouldn't appear as light to anyone looking, or a star of anyone looking out into space, but it would provide enough heat for this water planet to remain liquid. That's very interesting.
Right. Okay. Now, for the sentence three, where it says God said there should be light, the word light here actually doesn't mean light, as we know light. The word light here is clarity.
Aha, that's what I was looking for. Okay.
So what existed there was an openness where everything was clear. There was no such a thing as a blockage. There was no element. You could the vision was from one extreme of existence to the other. Whatever existed could see everything. There was nothing that was hidden. Everything was clear. There was no question. There was no need for answers. Everything was clear.
Well, we often talk about the perspective of space from different points of view. And we had Dr. Ed Close on the program talking about transcendental physics last year. And he mentioned that from the photon's perspective, all of the universe is local. Because at the speed of light, time slows down to zero. So everything is visible at one time. And wow, did the bells go off. We really, that's a very neat perspective. You know, here we are slowed down or possibly sped up to where we humans now perceive time. The right. Photon would never perceive time as we know it. The universe could age and pass away in a second to a photon. But really what it means is to the photon, the Big Bang never happened. It only happened to us from our perspective.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's correct. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello? Yeah. That is correct. And actually, what it says in Psalms, it says that 1,000 of our years is one day in his eyes. And Kabbalistically, what happens here in 15 years happens on another level in 1 minute. What happens here is that it, as you expand more spiritually, in the spiritual, it loses definition. And things happen within a split second that here could take eons.
Interesting. Interesting. Rabbi, we have John from Vancouver Island, Canada, on line one. Welcome to the program, John.
Hi, Brooks. Hi, Rabbi Yossi.
Hi, John. How are you?
Hi. I just thought, since no one else was calling in, that I would just call in because it's a talk show. But okay. This is really, really beyond me. But I'll just throw this one thing out. Mm-hmm. And that is, I've been looking at pi.
Okay.
You know, the relationship between the circumference and diameter and how it's not calculable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been referred to as a transcendent number.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And to me, on some intuitive level, it makes sense because, like, that works for a circle, but in a sphere, it's not about calculating the limit of it. It's actually a ratio that can go infinitely large and infinitely small, and so it should be.
Right. And actually, you're correct, and that's why every person is the center of the universe, because it's your consciousness that creates and allows the universe, and from you it expands and from you it contracts infinitely both ways.
Okay. Gee, what else do we have in the mind? So I'm somewhere.
You don't know what to say.
Well, this is pretty deep stuff.
Hey, that's all we do here.
Whenever I hear talk about water, I know this doesn't really make sense, but because of the idea of the redshift leading to the idea of the expansion of the universe, I've always had problems with that because I've always thought that, well, that could be a diffraction problem, especially if you're talking energy coming into the system. Like, I don't believe the universe is a closed system, because if it was closed, it would lead to entropy.
If it was closed, it would have had self-combustion a long time ago. It couldn't exist the way it exists. I think you're right. There has to be an openness.
Yeah, and so what I was thinking of was that the redshift had more to do with, like, the way light refracts, say, between coming from air into water, where it gets, you know, diffracted. And to me, the redshift has more to do with difference in two mediums as energy is coming into the system.
Well, it could. I mean, the way we speak of it when we spectrographically look at the universe, because we're just sitting here on Earth, not really traveling out in space, is we're looking at this from the perspective of the Doppler equations. That is to say, the speed of light is constant, but a body moving away from us will have a tendency to stretch out the wavelength and thus shift it more toward the red frequency.
Yeah. Well, okay, let me put this out. And I got into the idea of moving clocks go slow. Now, why do we have a future? Does the future not exist? If the future exists and we're moving into it, it sort of implies that the future's moving faster than what we are in the present. So a faster movement implies slower clock movement, and that would stretch wavelengths somehow. That's sort of how I was thinking about it.
Well, I like the concept. The way physicists look at the future and the past is they're both the same distance. It's the arrow of time moves equally in both directions. But as we were saying earlier, John, it's more like we perceive time because we've sped it back up from our perception, our observation. But in reality, all of the universe is local, so there really is no past and future. We just are stuck in the now. But from a physics point of view, if there was a now, we wouldn't have any idea how fast it travels in space.
I see that as a problem in measuring time. Like, if you actually could measure a second, it would mean you would start at the beginning of a second and at the end of a second simultaneously. That's how you would get an accurate measurement of a second. And unless the only other way is like through degrees on a, you know, curving time. But really, it's like measuring, say, an 8-foot 2x4. You start, you know, you're simultaneously starting at the end, at the beginning of it, and at the end of it with a tape measure. And you get an accurate measurement, but you can't do that with a second.
No, yeah.
You can't measure the beginning of a second, which you arbitrarily put zero on the beginning and one on the end of a second, but you're not doing it the way you're measuring a 2x4. You're actually waiting somehow.
Hmm. Yeah, I like the idea of measuring a 2x4 from the middle. It would save a lot of walking.
You're in two places at the same time. If you could do something similar with a second, you'd be two times in the same place.
Hmm.
You'd be that simultaneously at the beginning of a second and at the end of a second in the same way that you would measure a 2x4. But we don't do that, if you know what I mean.
No, but I do think it would be kind of cool to have a tape measure that would measure a 2x4 from the middle. It would save a lot of walking.
Right.
Actually, interesting. I think your observation is interesting and your thought is interesting. And just to add, in Hebrew, the word for time is zman. It also has another meaning, to invite. How you want to perceive something, and that would be time.
Right. Well, the discussion on time and the measurement of time and the perspectives of time is a whole program in and of itself. As I said, I've taken physical chemistry, and I know for a fact that 4 months takes at least 2 years to get through. So, and I've seen the second hand slow down to the speed of the hour hand on the clock in those classrooms. On the other hand, the really good stuff, the stuff I really enjoy, like the Super Bowl, it was over in 5 minutes. Unbelievable.
Right.
Okay. So it's like this program when everybody tells me it's 3 hours long. I still don't believe them. I've been doing it for 5 years. It's really over in about 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when I listen to it, it feels the same way.
Oh, that's good.
It's really incredible what goes on in your show.
Well, it's only because you're out there.
I've thrown out my little bit, so I guess I'll get off.
I really appreciate it, John. You bring a perspective to the program that's very cool, and we appreciate you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much.
All right, Rabbi, you were talking earlier about, this is also available on your website, which is revealingthesoul.com. So if you want to go deeper into anything Rabbi Yossi is saying tonight, if you want to contemplate on this, if you want to print it out and meditate on it, go to revealingthesoul.com. He has a letter that he puts out every Friday. Those are archived. You can read them. But he also has stored on his website a large volume of YouTube lectures, which are fascinating. Just grab something to drink, a sandwich, sit down, watch them. They're 7 or 8 minutes long. Your wisdom will increase, let me tell you. But in one of these you are talking about, with respect to creation, that we as humans have a tendency to look at things, first they're not there, and then they are there. And it's because we don't understand what came before. And you said the word is in the old record is sew, like sewing, like a needle pulling thread. Well, this is fascinating because there was a mathematician whose name was Riemann, and he came up with a mathematical process called Riemann's cut. And this is a mathematical way of looking at two-dimensional space, like living on a piece of paper or on a movie screen as cartoon people. And he described a way that there might form a cut in the paper or in the movie screen where we can pass through the paper or the screen to the other side. Do you think it's possible that this so word could imply that this water planet we're considering in the book of Genesis might have had its waters divided in this manner?
I would say yes. And the reason I would say yes is because as mentioned before, I translate the word Mayim as not as water, but a surge of the flow of with the wisdom of creation. So, yes, this is exactly what happened, that there are many levels of heaven, if you wish. And actually, as you go into the story of Genesis later on, then you have sentence six, where people translate, let there be a sky in the midst of the waters. Actually, it's not actually a sky. What it is a filter, an expansive filter. Surge. And it distinguishes between surge and surge. So you have it written there.
Interesting. Interesting. So the firmament that was placed between the waters, what does that mean?
It's not a firmament. It's a filter.
So the filter is putting part of the water on one side and part of the water on the other side, and the part that comes through into our dimension, into our universe, into our perspective on which we sail around, this world that becomes the creation of day number three, which we're about to discuss. This is the filtrate.
Of surge of life force that we can accept in this existence. Because if we had it from a higher level, a different level of surge, we wouldn't be able to exist.
Oh, I see. Because if we existed in a higher form, then we would not be having a mortal experience.
Correct.
Aha. Very important. Good perspective. Well, now, let's see here. You said that light is not the way we think light is. Are we talking about just energy, or are we talking about spiritual presence?
We're talking about clarity. Everything is clear.
Ah.
And the word darkness actually doesn't mean dark. It means opaque.
Oh, so you can't see. It's unclear or blocked.
Right. It's like a blinding light, but it's not a light. It's so powerful that we just can't see it. It blinds us if we look.
Interesting. Quite fascinating. I this is really opening up a lot of perspectives for me.
Now the word for day two. Each day one, which what we explained earlier, means just an expression of the Creator within defined boundaries. The word for day one is actually expression of unity. The word for day two, Sheni, also means change, expressing change.
You mean like a metamorphosis or just a constant rate of change?
Thursday, everything was unified, totally unified in all ways. But the idea of the second day is already there's a shift and a change in the flow. There are levels created. There are distinctions made. So it's a change from the unity that existed before.
A change in the unity that existed before.
Right. The day one is just an expression of what existed in unity, in total oneness. It's not like two things coming together as one, but it was a total oneness.
Mm-hmm.
Day two is really an expression of change and shift in that consciousness.
So would we consider this, at least from our mortal perspective, would we consider this division or multiplication? I know that sounds a little strange from a mathematician. So it's neither. So source is still source.
These distinctions only exist in thought. They're all in the same space.
So we're not separated at all?
No.
Well, then what are we fighting about?
I don't know. I haven't figured it out.
You know, once we get past day three, the earth that's been created starts to go through this terraforming. First, plants are put on it, and they're let go through this level of whatever it is. Now, it could be just be algae or something to turn all of the methane and all of the CO2 into oxygen so that it can support animal life. But for a period of time, there's only plants on the earth. And then the fourth day comes along, and all the animals are placed on the earth. Or I might have my days mixed up. Fourth and fifth day. And then Adam comes along. And how does this change things when sentient man is placed on the earth?
Because man wasn't placed on the earth at this point. The change to physicality only happened after. And I'm going to explain this. And in explaining this, I'm going to explain that there were many worlds and many people that existed before Adam and Eve.
Ah, wonderful. I want to hear this.
Yes, you're going to want to hear it. Firstly, from a Kabbalistic perspective, what it says is that the only souls, the souls that we have are all souls that were connected with Adam and Eve. The souls that were not connected with Adam and Eve did not come into this realm. So there you have a whole existence of energy and souls that never existed here on this planet as human beings, and they've existed elsewhere, or they may be spiritual, never had anything to do with here. But there is that definition definitely expressed in Kabbalah. Now let me explain another thing. You've heard of this snake business and this tree and this Adam and Eve story. It's very interesting. The word in Hebrew for snake is nachash. Actually, the word nachash means a whisper in Hebrew.
Uh-huh.
The word chash means to feel. Now, the reason a nachash is called a snake is because it feels the ground. If you put it on silk, it has a problem moving, smooth silk. But if you put it anything that has anything in it, it takes all the little bits and pieces and it moves on its belly. So because it moves kind of like a whisper, that's why it's called nachash. The word means whisper. So Adam and Eve, it wasn't a snake talking to them. They felt a whisper. They felt like an intuition. They heard something suggesting them what they should do. So that's part one. There's no snake there. It's a whisper. It's intuition.
Ah.
Next is this tree and fruit of the tree. The word eitz in Hebrew, which I translate as tree, the reason the word eitz is called tree is because it means it's deeply rooted. It has many roots. Because of the roots, it's called eitz. Now, what that means is that there are many pathways that existed. And this whisper told them to choose a pathway of where to go for them and their future generations. In other words, all these pathways existed. They just had to choose what they wanted for themselves.
Ah.
So that's a little different slant on the story.
I reckon so.
And that is based on what the words mean.
So how did we get off on such a wrong track? Why is it that we believe that, you know, Adam was created from dirt and had the breath of life breathed into him, and then his assignment was to name all the animals of the earth? And we'll talk about Eve in a moment, but this is a being of perfection that has no belly button that I can see.
Right. Well, I wondered that also, and I thought, you know, everything, King Solomon was supposed to be a wise man, and he said everything happens in its time. And I thought, well, maybe what it was is that the energy and light of creation were hidden in these words, and they weren't taught to people. It was shown to people as a story, helped them their imagination. So essentially, what it has in it, it has the secrets of creation, of the energies and formations in it, but it wasn't exposed to people. The text was kept away from everyone and understanding until the time is right for it to come. So till today, it has been a concealed book to most people, except for a few who have been able to understand it and study it in its proper depth. Most people have just been on the surface because it wasn't time. Now, we're in a time where, because of science, because of where we've moved, we can now begin to understand these things, and so now it's time where these things can be revealed. That's exactly what the words are talking about.
Okay. Well, we have Kevin on line one, and we have about 4 minutes left in the hour. So, Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hi, Brooks. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. We're having the most incredible deep discussion, and I think the lines are full. So, welcome. You're a new caller.
Oh, thank you very, very much. The question I have for the rabbi is probably one that... It's an interesting question. He's probably been asked this. Who is God?
That is a very good question. Essentially...
And also, what is his purpose? I mean, he writes has a book for us to learn. And what is his purpose? It should be very clear. Can you tell me about that?
Sure, you've asked a lot for a few minutes, but that's fine. Firstly, as I said earlier, there's no word in Hebrew as God. So you're asking not who is God. God is a power. There are many powers. You're asking what is the essence of existence? Where does it come from? What's our purpose? In order to understand that, you have to go to a space of no definition. So, for example, if two people are totally in love, they're together, they don't need to think, they're just in a space, everything is quiet, everything is, it can stay like that forever. You go to a space where you don't need the questions, you don't need the answers, you don't need to know anything, because as long as you need to know, you're going to limit what you want, what has to be according to your knowledge. You have to go to a space that's beyond you. Once you acknowledge there's a space beyond you, you let go of your need to know and need to have the answers, then the answer of why you're here in this moment comes to you.
Wow.
But in order to do that, you have to be totally in the present. Too many people are in the past, dragging the past, or thinking the future. So the energy of their body, you look at a person who's worried about the future, they're not in themselves. They're somewhere else. You look at a person who's worried about the past, they're elsewhere. But if you're totally in the present, everything you need to know is what you have with you, and you know exactly what to do in that moment. And then you know what to do in the next moment as each moment continues.
Okay, thank you very much. I really appreciate your comment on that.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Brooks.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. And we're going to begin hour two in about 4 minutes. Don't go away. We'll be back with more Rabbi Yossi after this. It's going to get deeper, wider, and even more interesting. We'll be back with more X Squared Radio after this.